Hi guys, my name's Mark. I'm a compulsive overeater from the UK. If I talk too fast, you can tell me to slow down because sometimes my accent becomes a little thick, apparently. Of course, I don't think I've got an accent, but everyone else tells me I've got an accent. I've seen some of you before, and it's nice to be back. I've not been to this meeting for such a long time. I'm going to qualify for what it was like before OA, what it's been like during OA, and what it's like now. So I have always had a problem with foods. Just a little bit of a backstory. Let me just say this at the start of prayer because I'm feeling really nervous. God, please help me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and new experience. Please help me to see the truth about OA, the big book, the steps, and my fellows. And please help me speak through me. That will be done. My name, amen. Okay, it's been a while since I've done one of these. I've always had a problem with food ever since I was younger. I come from a single parent family. My mum had a lot of mental health problems, and she'd lost two children, one before me, one after me. And I definitely felt the pressure of that. My mum was a very sick lady. She got married to my real dad, and he never wanted a kid, so he never wanted me. Gave my mum an ultimatum. Went for domestic abuse and violence, and I remember my dad hitting my mum, and I had my bed up pushed up against the door, and I remember hiding underneath the bed, just wishing to be big and strong, and I wanted to be able to defend my mum at the age of like 4 or 5. I remember that. And then he took her through the court battles and really tried to use me as a tool, and he kidnapped me for a little while and stuff. So that was quite traumatic there. And then we moved around a lot. My mum was looking for a geographical cure. She was one of us. She was a compulsive overeater, become restrictor, and she also used drugs and alcohol in her time. I got sexually abused from the age of probably about 8 until 10, and that was really tough. I got sexually abused by a man, and I actually come out gay a lot of years later. That was a lot of turmoil to do that. I guess what I was trying to get at there is I've been through a lot of trauma in my life, and through all of that, I used food as my best friend. Food never let me down. I remember, stealing food from my nan's fridge and saying that it was someone else that ate it and there was nothing else there. And I've eaten burnt food, gone off food, stolen food from my mum's freezer. I remember sitting on frozen packs of cooked ham at Christmas and then having a tummy ache and asking my mum like, "What's wrong with me?" And she never knew that I'd ate that. Money was always a problem when I was a kid because my mum was an active addict and was on a really low income and welfare. She had mental health problems and stuff as well. But I soon become best friends with the dinner ladies at school, and got extra portions, seconds and thirds, and would be over helpful to get all of that. And because I'd been sexually abused and gone through court cases and had mental breakdowns, everyone was like, "Oh, he's broken, give him the food." And I used that as a big excuse. And then I went to culinary school, become a chef, and then worked in bars and restaurants and clubs for many a time throughout my adulthood, and become friends with all of the kitchen boys. I went to work in Spain. And 2014, and then 2015, I had a breakdown whilst I was in Spain, and I got diagnosed with bipolar and become manic. And I was put in an asylum type hospital with no one that spoke English, apart from some broken English with some doctors. And that was the worst time in my life. I'd always been about 18 stone, at my adult life, and then in 2015, I put on 10 stone in a year, and I went up to my highest weight at 28 stone 12, which is 404 pounds. And that was the worst year of my life. I wanted to die so bad. I had chub rub, blood blisters. I had to sit down to pee. I couldn't wash myself properly in the shower. It hurt whenever I was over in bed. I wouldn't be seen. I didn't want to be seen at all. I'd hide in my room, pretend I was asleep when people would come round. And I remember when I'd get a little bit of money, I'd walk down to the corner shop and I would buy copious amounts of sweet trigger foods, and I pretend it's for families and make up this story. Oh, the kids are all right this weekend. I've only got four cats. I don't have any kids. But I would always go out with the price of food, with the promise of food. Sorry, my t-shirts didn't cover my belly. I was in size 4, 5, 6 XL clothes. And I first ever heard about OA in 2017 from my neighbor's friend, actually. I went to a first meeting on Zoom. I identified, I was like, yeah. And I heard the word God and I was like, that's it, I'm off. I'm not a religious person at all. And then I've become really desperate. And in 2020, I know lockdown was not good for a lot of people, but for me, it was my saving grace. I come into program in 2020 and got a sponsor after about 3 months. And that sponsor wasn't for me. She worked the steps via the Big Book of Awakening way, which took me 7 months to get through steps 1, 2, and 3. And I kept relapsing, and we parted ways. And I'd love to tell you that was the last time I'd ever picked up food, but that wasn't the case. I've been in and out of the room since 2020. And my first relapse, I went from 28 stone 12 to, to 32 stone 9, which is £457. And I remember my mum being 32 stone when I was a kid, and I thought to myself, I'd never let myself get that big. How could you? That would never be me. And I went over and above that. My life was so unmanageable, and I really just wanted to die. But I have a beautiful sponsor who I've worked the steps with 3 times now, and yeah, she's just phenomenal. I love her. She's somebody in the world, one of the only people in the world. It makes me emotional that I actually trust with my life. I have really bad trust issues, and she holds a mirror up to me. I could find any excuse to eat. I could convince anyone to go for food, and I could never ever see what the food was doing to me. I could only ever just see what it was doing for me. I was going and was eating, huge amounts, huge. I'd buy Christmas candy for kids at Christmas, and I'd rebuy that candy over 14, 15, 16 times. I'd find any excuse to eat at all. So yeah, and I tried so many things to lose weight. I tried, Atkins, I tried like pay and weigh clubs, exercise machines, no alcohol, any diet club or any kind of weight loss book I could find, and none of it worked for me because I am a true compulsive overeater. I know that. I know I've got a spiritual malady, I've got a mental obsession and I've got a physical allergy. When I put that substance into my mouth, I cannot control the amount I take, and I don't decide when it's done, the disease does. And then fast forwarding through to this time around in recovery, I've probably been in RA about a year, maybe less than a year. And working the steps, I really struggled when I first come in. Step one, I admitted that I was powerless over food, but I didn't want to admit that my life was unmanageable, but clearly it was. And I never knew others did what I did with food. And to be so honest and courageous, it's so hard to speak openly when I think when you first come into the rooms. And I was so scared of doing the steps. But I did. I admitted I was powerless over food. And I've only got two choices in program. I've only got, I can either eat myself to death, like a death of a thousand cuts, and I'll have, carers in wiping my bed sores. I will literally be 600, 700 pounds, and I'll kill myself. I know I will. Or I will go to any lengths to find recovery, and that means doing whatever it takes. Step two. So I came to believe, just a little mustard seed of willingness. I was under the delusion when I was a kid. I said to my mum, "Was there? Is there a God?" And she said to me, "Mark, if there's a God, why would there be so much, rape, paedophilia, natural world disasters, hunger, poverty in the world?" And she said, "There's no God." And I took that as gospel. Now seeing, having worked the steps, that my mum was a really sick, untreated addict, and that was just her opinion. That's fine. And I asked around in LA a lot about what people thought of the whole God situation and all of that. And they said, you know, God never takes away free will. But I didn't want to accept that. But that's the truth. He doesn't take away free will. And he's like a gentleman. He only comes in if he's invited. I had, not to scare anyone, I had about 2,000 resentments the first way round through OA. One from being, you know, a kid when I was like six, stole a last Yorkshire pudding from a buffet style dinner, the other being up to my sexual abuser. But yeah, I not all I need to know about God is there's two things, is one that there is one, and the second one that it is not me. You know, step three, God is all or is nothing, you know, I can't pick and choose. And it's just trust in putting one foot in front of the other. And it's a we program, not an I program, because I cannot do this on my own. My ego wants to tell me I can, but I really cannot. I know that. I was so fearful of step four, but it was such a freeing process. Well, actually, that's a lie. It's not a freeing process. Step four was a good process doing the first couple of columns. And then when I looked at my part, I didn't like that. That made me feel uncomfortable. Step five, I shared some stuff with my sponsor and we do video communication. I'd hold my book up over my face so she couldn't see me. Step six, asking God to remove my defects of character. This is hard because I love to gossip. I wanted to keep. What, sorry, what was that?
10 minutes.
Thank you, darling. I used to like to gossip, and I remember my sponsor said, "You can't pick or choose, Mark." And yeah, step seven, I can ask my higher power to, you know, release my defects of character, but I can't expect them to be taken away. And step eight was an easier one I found. Doing a list of people I'd harmed, but also there was some harms I did that didn't have resentments attached to them. And nine, step nine, making the amends was one of the most struggling ones that I was scared to do. But actually, it was a really freeing process, and I didn't hold myself. I held myself to a lot more than what people said to me. That isn't what that people, what I thought people thought of me, isn't actually the case. Like I had a lot of people said that they didn't remember the things that I did. And then yeah, steps 10, 11 and 12, I live in every day. I do my resentment, my step 10s as and when they come up. I do my prayer and meditation. I do my morning routine. It takes me an hour every morning without fail. I have to get up and, you know, connect to my higher power. I don't know what my higher power is. I just know that it's something there that's stronger than me. I pray and meditate a lot in the morning. In the evening, I struggle a little more. I still do my evening review, and I'm not as great as meditating in the evening. I can't lie. I can only program, but I'm not perfect. You know, I'm not perfect at all. And perfectionism, I let this stop me doing so much in my life because I want everything to be just as it's supposed to be because I'm so scared of what others think of me. Excuse me, but what other people say and do behind my back or think of me behind my back is none of my business. And now's the nice bit, like what it's like now. So throughout my time in recovery, I do have freedom from food obsession most of the time. I still get food faults occasionally. Like at the minute, I've got a water infection, and I'm feeling a bit rubbish, and I'm wanting to soothe with food. It's coming up to Mother's Day, well, a couple of weeks. I'm an addict, so I'll have to prepare and be to be, yeah, prepared for everything. And my mum passed away in 2021 of a heart attack at the age of 54. And before my mum passed, I got to make an amends to her, which was beautiful because we had a really we had a real complicated relationship. And so yeah, I got to make an amends to my mum, which was a really I made a third amends to her, actually, to her ashes. And I've quit smoking. This is something that I never thought was possible. I've been smoking 40 cigarettes a day since I was 13, and I'm now 36. I don't like to admit that. I'm like, oh, I feel old. I know you're going to tell me that I'm not that old, but I am, like, mentally. So I quit smoking, which is amazing. I've got 1 year, 6 months, and 27 days clean of cigarettes, which is Phenomenal. And you know how I quit smoking is when my mum passed, I took over the tenancy on this house, and through this program, it allowed me to want more for my life. I remember being in my garden, being like, I want to be able to afford to get some more flowers. I want a nicer garden. I want. And that's. I was stunned by that, and I was like, I can't be smoking anymore. It's costing so much money. I put down my huge diet soda addiction. I don't know. If anyone remembers, but I was hugely addicted to Pepsi Max, and I would drink 4 2-liter bottles a day. And then it went, I swapped in recovery, you know, oh, I can have one can when I go out in the car. No, I went into like multiple packs a week. So I put down Pepsi Max, and then I put down, this was all a gradual process for me. I put down sweeteners. So now I just drink water and coffee. I had the biggest hissy fit with my sponsor. You want me to just drink water? What do you think I am? Like, I went absolutely bananas. But actually, I have to remind myself, this is first world problems, Mark. There's some people in this world that are praying for the life that I've got today. You know, they don't know where their next grain of rice is coming from or their next glass of clean drinking water. There's always something to be grateful for. And it took me a while with the attitude of gratitude. I started little, a couple, I think I did 3 a day when I first started. Now I do a gratitude list every morning. Between me and my higher power. Sometimes I share to my sponsor if I want to look amazing, but she doesn't judge me. And I also become debt free after 5 years, which is phenomenal for me. I was in a load of debt with my food, and credit card debt. And I've cut out some toxic relationships, which is the newest thing for me that I've done. I really struggled with this, because I'm a people pleaser. And, but yeah, you know, some people are put in our lives for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. But many people, sorry, very few people start out and end in our lives. I've lost about £110 today. I've still got a way to go on my journey, but it's in God's hands, not mine. I've started now, which fills me with fear. I'm starting to weigh my food, which is something I thought I'd never do, but I am. I'm at that point in my recovery where I'm weighing my carbs for now. I don't necessarily overeat. Who am I? I don't normally overeat vegetables or meat, but carbs is something that I have a problem with. And yeah, I show up and take my action even when I don't want to. Something I've missed out, I wanted to say that before I come into recovery this time, I thought that I had a new idea. I thought that I could do these weight loss injections, the Olympic or Ozempic, whatever you call it. Ozempic, yeah. But my friend found this person on Facebook, and we was taking these vials. We bought these vials from this lady in a polythene bag. It was dodgy as hell, needles and wipes, and I was injecting myself 3 or 4, no, for maybe 3 or 4 days, and I felt awful. I got diagnosed with diabetes type 2 before this stint in recovery, and I couldn't stop binging. I felt awful, horrendous. Couldn't get out of bed. And I started injecting myself. And my sponsor, actually, she's a trained nurse, and she just said, Mark, like, what's even in that? I said, I don't know. I don't know. I said, but I'm so desperate. And she said, do you know what the answer is? Like, what do you think it is? I said, I know I'm a compulsive overeater. I need recovery. She said, yeah, but you need it, Mark. But do you want it enough? Are you going to work it? And I was like, oh, I've got no other choice. You know, I've got no other choice. And I don't always like it, but I'm grateful for the gifts I've got in recovery today. And of course, the perfectionism in this region, I want to be perfect. I don't want to be seen until I'm, you know, Channing Tatum in the flesh. But that's just not my truth for today. And where does the need to be perfect come from? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe because I felt rejected. I mean, that could be 100 different reasons. But all I know is today that if I suit up and show up and take the action, you know, my head will catch up. I hope.
1 minute.
Thank you, my darling. So yeah, that went much quicker than I expected. Who knew that I love to talk? I'm an addict. I love to talk about myself. But if no one's told you today, you're loved, you're worthy, you're enough, and you're never alone. And it's just one day at a time and one foot in front of the other. And the one line that's always kept me back, coming back to program, is a life beyond my wildest dreams. And it's just on that horizon. You know, it is possible. If I can do it, anyone can do it. You know, I went to so many different schools, and I'm not massively educated, but it's not a program of people who want it or need it. It's a program of people who do it. And thank you so much for letting me share. I hope I've made some sense. That didn't go exactly as I'd scripted it, but yeah. thank you very much for letting me share and sending you lots of love.